The burdens of nine become mine. Why must I carry the madness of them all? O Almighty, release me. Dated Palaeseis, 1173, unknown seconds pre-death. Subject, a wealthy light eyes. Sample collected secondhand.
The cold night air threatened that a stretch of winter might soon be coming. Dalinar wore a long, thick uniform coat over trousers and shirt. It buttoned stiffly up the chest and to the collar, and was long in the back and on the sides, coming down to his ankles, flowing at the waist like a cloak. In earlier years, it might have been worn with a takama, though Dalinar had never liked the skirt-like garments. The purpose of the uniform was not fashion or tradition, but to distinguish him easily for those who followed him. He wouldn't have nearly the problem with the other light eyes if they would at least wear their colors. He stepped onto the king's feasting island. Stands had been set up at the sides where the braziers normally stood, each one bearing one of those new fabrials that gave off heat. The stream between the islands had slowed to a trickle. Ice had stopped melting in the highlands. Attendance at the feast tonight was small, though that was mostly manifest on the four islands that were not the king's. Where there was access to Elikar and the High Princes, people would attend even if the feast were held in the middle of a high storm. Dalinar walked down the central pathway, and Navani, sitting at a woman's dining table, caught his eyes. She turned away, perhaps still remembering his abrupt words to her at their last meeting. Wit wasn't at his customary place insulting those who walked onto the King's Island. In fact, he wasn't to be seen at all. That was not surprising. Wit didn't like to grow predictable. He'd spent several recent feasts on his pedestal doling out insults. Likely, he felt he'd played out that tactic. All nine other High Princes were in attendance. Their treatment of Dalinar had grown stiff and cold since refusing his requests to fight together, as if they were offended by the mere offer. Lesser Light Eyes made alliances, but the High Princes were like kings themselves. Other High Princes were rivals to be kept at arm's length. Dalinar sent a servant to fetch him food and sat down at the table. His arrival had been delayed while he took reports from the companies he'd called back, so he was one of the last to eat. Most of the others had turned to mingling. His food arrived, steamed stagum, a brownish tuber that grew in deep puddles, atop a bed of boiled talu. The grain was puffed with water, and the entire meal was drenched in a thick, peppery brown gravy. He slid out his knife and sliced a disc off the end of the stagum. Using his knife to spread talu over the top, he grasped the vegetable disc between two fingers and began to eat. It had been prepared both spicy and hot this night, probably because of the chill, and tasted good as he chewed, the steam from his plate fogging the air in front of him. So far, Yasna had not replied regarding his vision, though Navani claimed she might be able to find something on her own. She was a renowned scholar herself, though her interests had always been more in fabrials. He glanced at her.
Was I a fool to offend her as I did?
Would it make her use the knowledge of his visions against him?
No, she wouldn't be that petty.
Navani did seem to care for him, though her affection was inappropriate. The chairs around him were left empty. He was becoming a pariah. First, because of his talk of the codes, then because of his attempts to get the High Princes to work with him, and finally because of Sadius's investigation. No wonder Adolin was worried. Suddenly, someone slid right into the seat beside Dalinar, wearing a black cloak against the chill. It wasn't one of the High Princes.
Who would dare?
The figure lowered his hood, revealing Wit's hawk-like face. All lines and peaks, with a sharp nose and jaw, delicate eyebrows, and keen eyes. Dalinar waited for the inevitable stream of two clever quips. Wit, however, didn't speak. He inspected the crowd, his expression intense.
Yes, Adolin's right about this one, too.
Dalinar himself had judged the man too harshly in the past. He was not the fool some of his predecessors had been. Wit continued in silence, and Dalinar decided that, perhaps, The man's prank this night was to sit down beside people and unnerve them. It wasn't much of a prank, but Dalinar often missed the point of what Wit did. Perhaps it was terribly clever, if one had the mind for it. Dalinar returned to his meal.
Winds are changing. It's been happening for months now. A whirlwind, shifting and churning, blowing us round and round, like a world spinning. But we can't see it because we're too much a part of it.
World spinning? What foolishness is this?
The foolishness of men who care, Dalinar, and the brilliance of those who do not. The second depend on the first, but also exploit the first, while the first misunderstand the second, hoping that the second are more like the first. And all of their games steal our time, second by second.
Wit, I haven't the mind for this tonight. I'm sorry if I'm missing your intent, but I have no idea what you mean.
I know. Adenalcium.
What?
Have you ever heard the term, Dalinar?
At a what?
Nothing. Nonsense. Balderdash. Figgledygrack. Isn't it odd that gibberish words are often the sounds of other words, cut up and dismembered, then stitched into something like them, yet wholly unlike them at the same time? I wonder if you could do that to a man. Pull him apart, emotion by emotion, bit by bit, bloody chunk by bloody chunk. Then combine them back together into something else, like a Dicean Amian. If you do put a man together like that, Dalinar, be sure to name him Gibberish, after me. Or perhaps Gibbletish.
Is that your name, then? Your real name?
No, my friend. I've abandoned my real name. But when next we meet, I'll think of a clever one for you to call me. Until then, Wit will suffice. Or if you must, you may call me Hoyd. Watch yourself. Sadeus is planning a revelation at the feast tonight, though I know not what it is. Farewell. I'm sorry I didn't insult you more.
Wit stood.
Wait, you're leaving?
I must. I hope to return. I'll do so if I'm not killed. Probably will anyway. Apologize to your nephew for me.
He won't be happy. He's fond of you.
Yes, it's one of his more admirable traits. Alongside that of paying me, letting me eat his expensive food, and giving me opportunity to make sport of his friends. The Cosmere, unfortunately, takes precedence over free food. Watch yourself, Dalinar. Life becomes dangerous, and you're at the center of it.
Wit nodded once, then ducked into the night. He put his hood up, and soon Dalinar couldn't separate him from the darkness. Dalinar turned back to his meal.
Sadeus is planning a revelation at the feast tonight, though I know not what it is.
Wit was rarely wrong, though he was almost always odd. Was he really leaving, or would he still be in camp the next morning, laughing at the prank he had played on Dalinar?
No, that wasn't a prank.
He waved over a master servant in black and white.
Fetch my elder son for me.
The servant bowed and withdrew. Dalinar ate the rest of his food in silence, glancing occasionally at Sadeus and Elikar. They weren't at the dining table any longer, and so Sadeus's wife had joined them. Iale was a curvaceous woman who reportedly dyed her hair. That indicated foreign blood in her family's past. Alethi hair always bred true, proportionate to how much Alethi blood you had. Foreign blood would mean stray hairs of another color. Ironically, mixed blood was far more common in light eyes than dark eyes. Dark eyes rarely married foreigners, but the Alethi houses often needed alliances or money from outside. Food finished, Dalinar stepped down from the king's table onto the island proper. A few moments later, Adolin strode on to the king's island. He hurried over to Dalinar.
Father, you sent for me.
Stay close. Wit told me that Sadeus plans to make a storm of something tonight.
Time to go, then.
No, we need to let this play out.
Father!
But you may prepare, just in case. You invited officers of our guard to the feast tonight?
Yes, 6 of them.
They have my further invitation to the King's Island. Pass the word. What of the King's Guard?
I've made sure that some of the ones guarding the island tonight are among those most loyal to you. I think we should position them over there. It'll make a good line of retreat in case the king tries to have you arrested.
I still don't think it will come to that.
You can't be sure. Elikar allowed this investigation in the first place, after all. He's growing more and more paranoid.
Dalinar glanced over at the king. The younger man almost always wore his shard plate these days, though he didn't have it on now. He seemed continually on edge, glancing over his shoulder, eyes darting from side to side.
Let me know when the men are in position.
Adolin nodded. walking away quickly. The situation gave Dalinar little stomach for mingling. Still, standing alone and looking awkward was no better, so he made his way to where High Prince Hatham was speaking with a small group of light eyes beside the main fire pit. They nodded to Dalinar as he joined them. Regardless of the way they were treating him in general, they would never turn him away at a feast like this. That simply wasn't done to one of his rank.
Ah, Bright Lord Dalinar.
The long-necked, slender man wore a ruffled green shirt underneath a robe-like coat with a darker green silk scarf around the neck. A faintly glowing ruby sat on each of his fingers. They'd each had some of their stormlight drained away by a fabrial made for the purpose. Of Hatham's four companions, two were lesser light eyes, and one was a short white-robed ardent Dalinar didn't know. The last was a red-gloved Natan man with bluish skin and stark white hair, two locks dyed a deep red and braided down to hang alongside his cheeks. He was a visiting dignitary. Dalinar had seen him at the feast.
What was his name again?
Tell me, Bright Lord Dalinar, have you been paying much attention to the conflict between the Tukari and the Emuli?
It's a religious conflict, isn't it?
Both were Makabaki kingdoms on the southern coast where trade was plentiful and profitable.
Religious? No, I wouldn't say that. All conflicts are essentially economic in nature.
Onak, that's his name.
Money is behind every war. Religion is but an excuse, or perhaps a justification.
There's a difference?
Of course. An excuse is what you make after the deed is done, while a justification is what you offer before.
I would say an excuse is something you claim, but do not believe, Nak'ali.
Hatham was using the high form of Onak's name.
While a justification is something you actually believe.
Why such respect? The Natan must have something that Hatham wants.
Regardless, this particular war is over the city of Sesamalix Dar, which the Emuli have made their capital. It's an excellent trade city, and the Tukari want it.
I've heard of Sesamalix Dar. The city is quite spectacular, filling rifts cut into the stone.
Indeed. There's a particular composition of the stone there that lets the water drain. The design is amazing. It's obviously one of the Dawn Cities.
My wife would have something to say on that. She makes the Dawn Cities her study.
The city's pattern is central to the Emuli religion. They claim it is their ancestral homeland, a gift to them from the heralds. And the Tukari are led by that god-priest of theirs, Tazim. So the conflict is religious in nature.
The speaker was the white-robed Ardent.
And if the city weren't such a fantastic port, would they be as persistent about proclaiming the city's religious significance? I think not. They're pagans, after all, so we can't presume their religion has any real importance.
Talk of the Dawn Cities had been popular lately among the Light Eyes, the idea that certain cities could trace their origins back to the Dawn Singers.
Perhaps. Have any of you heard of a place known as Feverstone Keep?
The others shook their heads. Even Onak had nothing to say.
Why?
I'm just curious.
The conversation continued, though Dalinar let his attention wander back toward Elikar and his circle of attendants.
When will Sadius make his announcement? If he intends to suggest that I be arrested, he wouldn't do it at a feast, would he?
Dalinar forced his attention back to the conversation.
I really should pay more heed to what is happening in the world.
Once, news of which kingdoms were in conflict had fascinated him.
So much has changed since the visions began.
Perhaps it's not economic or religious in nature. Everyone knows that the Makabaki tribes have odd hatreds of one another.
Perhaps.
Does it matter? It's just another war. If they weren't fighting one another, they'd find others to attack. It's what we do. Vengeance, honor, riches, religion. The reasons all just produce the same result.
The others fell still, the silence quickly growing awkward.
Which devotee do you credit, Bright Lord Dalinar?
The Order of Telenalot.
Yes, it makes sense. They do hate arguing over religion. You must find this discussion terribly boring.
Ah, a safe out from the conversation.
Dalinar smiled, nodding in thanks to Hatham's politeness.
The Order of Telenalot? I always considered that a devotee for the lesser people.
This from a Natan.
My family has always been devoutly Vorin.
Yes, conveniently so, since your family has used its Vorin ties to trade favorably in Alethkar. One wonders if you are equally devout when not standing on our soil.
I don't have to be insulted like this.
He turned and strode away, causing Hatham to raise a hand.
Nakali, please ignore him.
Insufferable bore.
You are bold, Ardent. Perhaps foolishly so. You insult a man Hatham wants to do business with.
Actually, I belong to Bright Lord Hatham. He asked me to insult his guest. Bright Lord Hatham wants Arnak to think that he is shamed. Now, when Hatham agrees quickly to Arnak's demands, the foreigner will assume it was because of this, and won't delay the contract signing out of suspicion that it is proceeding too easily.
Ah, of course. They go to such lengths.
Considering that, what was Dalinar to think of Hatham's politeness earlier, when he had given Dalinar a reason to explain his apparent distaste for conflict?
Is Hatham preparing me for some covert manipulation?
I would appreciate it if you did not repeat to anyone what I just told you, Bright Lord.
Dalinar noticed Adolin returning to the King's Island, accompanied by six of Dalinar's officers in uniform and wearing their swords.
Why did you tell me in the first place, then?
Just as Hatham wishes his partner in negotiations to know of his goodwill, I wish you to know of our goodwill toward you, Bright Lord.
Dalinar frowned. He'd never had much to do with the Ardents. His devotery was simple and straightforward. Dalinar got his fill of politics with the court. He had little desire to find more in religion.
Why? What should it matter if I have goodwill toward you?
We will speak with you again.
The Ardent bowed low and withdrew. Dalinar was about to demand more, but Adolin arrived, looking after High Prince Hatham.
What was that all about?
Dalinar just shook his head. Ardents weren't supposed to engage in politics, whatever their devotery. They'd been officially forbidden to do so since the hierocracy. But, as with most things in life, the ideal and the reality were two separate things. The Light Eyes couldn't help but use the Ardents in their schemes, and so, more and more, the devotees found themselves a part of the court.
Father, the men are in place.
Good.
Dalinar set his jaw and then crossed the small island. He would see this fiasco finished with once and for all. He passed the fire pit, a wave of dense heat making the left side of his face prickle with sweat, while the right side was still chilled by the autumn cold. Adolin hurried up to walk by him, hand on his side sword.
Father, what are we doing?
Being provocative.
Dalinar strode right up to where Elikar and Sadeus were chatting. The crowd of sycophants reluctantly parted for Dalinar. Elikar noticed him.
Yes, Uncle?
Sadeus, what is the status of your investigation of the cut girth strap?
Dalinar, are you...
Your investigation, Sadeus.
Your Majesty, I was actually planning to make an announcement regarding this very subject tonight. I was going to wait until later, but if Dalinar is going to be so insistent...
I am.
Oh, go ahead, Sadeus. You have me curious now.
The king waved to a servant who tapped the chimes to call for silence.
You demanded this, old friend.
Dalinar folded his arms, keeping his gaze fixed on Sadeus. His six kobold guardsmen stepped up behind him, and Dalinar noticed that a group of similar light-eyed officers from Sadeus's war camp were listening nearby.
Well, I wasn't planning to have such an audience. Mostly this was planned for your majesty only.
Unlikely.
What would he do if Adolin was right and Sadeus charged him with trying to assassinate Elikar? It would, indeed, be the end of Alethkar. Dalinar would not go quietly, and the war camps would turn against one another. The nervous peace that had held them together for the last decade would come to an end. Elikar would never be able to hold them together. Also, if it turned to battle, Dalinar would not fare well. The others were alienated from him. He'd have enough trouble facing Sadeus. If several of the others joined against him, he would fall, horribly outnumbered. He could see now Adolin thought it an incredible act of foolishness to have listened to the visions. And yet, in a powerfully surreal moment, Dalinar felt that he'd done the correct thing. He'd never felt it as strongly as at that moment, preparing to be condemned.
Sadeus, don't weary me with your sense of drama. They're listening. I'm listening. Dalinar looks like he's ready to burst a vein in his forehead. Speak.
Very well. My very first task as High Prince of Information was to discover the true nature of the attempt on His Majesty's life during the Great Shell Hunt.
Sadeus waved a hand, motioning to one of his men who hurried away. Another stepped forward, handing Sadeus the broken leather strap.
I took this strap to three separate leather workers in three different war camps. Each came to the same conclusion. It was cut. The leather is relatively new and has been well cared for, as proven by the lack of cracking and flaking in other areas. The tear is too even. Someone slit it.
For what purpose?
Please, High Prince. First you demand I report, then you interrupt me.
Dalinar fell still. Around them, more and more of the important light eyes were gathering. He could sense their tension.
But when was it cut?
Sadeus turned to address the crowd. He did have a flair for the dramatic.
That was pivotal, you see. I took leave to interview numerous men who were on that hunt. None reported seeing anything specific, though all remembered that there was one odd event. The time when Bright Lord Dalinar and His Majesty raced to a rock formation, a time when Dalinar and the King were alone. There was a problem, however, one Dalinar himself raised. Why cut the strap on a shard-bearer's saddle? A foolish move. A horseback fall wouldn't be of much danger to a man wearing shard plate.
To the side, the servant Sadeus had sent away returned leading a youth with sandy hair bearing only a few hints of black. Sadeus fished something out of a pouch at his waist, holding it up. A large sapphire. It wasn't infused. In fact, looking closely, Dalinar could see that it was cracked. It wouldn't hold stormlight now.
The question drove me to investigate the king's shard plate. 8 of the 10 sapphires used to infuse his plate were cracked following the battle.
It happens. You lose a few in every battle.
But 8? 1 or 2 is normal. But have you ever lost 8 in one battle before, young Colin?
Adolin's only reply was a glare. Sadeus tucked away the gemstone, nodding to the youth his men had brought.
This is one of the grooms in the king's employ. Finn, isn't it?
Yes, Bright Lord.
What is it you told me earlier, Finn? Please say it again so that all may hear.
Well, Bright Lord, sir, it was just this. Everyone spoke of the saddle being checked over in Bright Lord Dalinar's camp. And I suppose it was, right as that. But I'm the one who prepared His Majesty's horse before it was turned over to Bright Lord Dalinar's men. And I did it, I promise I did. Put on his favourite saddle and everything. But...
But what, Finn?
But when the king's head grooms took the horse past on its way to the High Prince Dalinar's camp, it was wearing a different saddle. I swear it.
But that happened in the king's palace complex.
Indeed. How keen-minded of you, young Colin. This discovery, mixed with the cracked gemstones, means something. I suspect that whoever attempted to kill His Majesty planted in his shard plate flawed gemstones that would crack when strained, losing their stormlight. Then they weakened the saddle girth with a careful slit. The hope would be that His Majesty would fall while fighting a great shell, allowing it to attack him. The gemstones would fail, the plate would break, and His Majesty would fall to an accident while hunting. However, it is important to realize that these events, the switching of the saddle or the planting of the gemstones, must have happened before His Majesty met up with Dalinar. I feel that Dalinar is a very unlikely suspect. In fact, my present guess is that the culprit is someone that Bright Lord Dalinar has offended. That someone wanted us all to think he might be involved. It may not have actually been intended to kill His Majesty, just to cast suspicion upon Dalinar.
I was right.
What? All evidence points to your father being innocent, Adolin. You find this surprising?
But no, but...
Around them, the light eyes began to disperse. Dalinar's officers remained standing behind him, as if expecting a surprise strike.
Blood of my father's... What does it mean?
Sadeus waved for his men to take the groom away, then nodded to Elikar and withdrew in the direction of the evening trays, where warmed wine sat in pitchers next to toasted breads. Dalinar caught up to Sadeus as the shorter man was filling a small plate. Dalinar took him by the arm, the fabric of Sadeus's robe soft beneath his fingers. Sadeus looked at him, raising an eyebrow.
Thank you for not going through with it.
For not going through with what? I had hoped to make this presentation after I discovered more concrete proof that you weren't involved. Unfortunately, pressed as I was, the best I could do was to indicate that it was unlikely you were involved. There will still be rumors, I'm afraid.
Wait, you wanted to prove me innocent?
Do you know what your problem is, Dalinar? Why everyone has begun finding you so tiresome? The presumption. You've grown despicably self-righteous. Yes, I asked Elokar for this position so I could prove you innocent. Is it so storming difficult for you to believe someone else in this army might do something honest?
I...
Of course it is. You've been looking down on us like a man standing atop a single sheet of paper, who therefore thinks himself so high as to see for miles. Well, I think that Book of Gavilar's is creme, and the codes are lies people pretended to follow so that they could justify their shriveled consciences. Damnation, I've got one of those shriveled consciences myself. But I didn't want to see you maligned for this bungled attempt to kill the king. If you'd wanted him dead, you'd have just burned out his eyes and been done with it. The problem is, Elokar kept on and on about that blasted strap. And people started talking. Since he was under your protection and you two rode off together like that, Stormfather only knows how they could think you would try to have Elokar assassinated. You can barely bring yourself to kill Parshendi these days.
I owe you a debt. I shouldn't have treated you as I have these 6 years.
This wasn't for you alone. So long as everyone thought you were behind the attempt, nobody would figure out who really tried to have Elokar killed. And someone did, Dalinar. I don't accept 8 gemstones cracking in one fight. The strap alone would have been a ridiculous way to attempt an assassination. But with weakened shard plate, I'm half tempted to believe that the surprise arrival of the Chasm Fiend was orchestrated too. How someone would manage that, though, I have no idea.
And the talk of me being framed?
Mostly to give the others something to gossip about while I sort through what's really happening.
Sadeus set down his plate, straightening his robe and dusting off the shoulder.
I haven't given up on you yet, Dalinar. I'm probably going to need you before this is all through. I do have to say, though, I don't know what to make of you lately. That talk of you wanting to abandon the Vengeance Pact, is there any truth to that?
I mentioned it in confidence to Elokar as a means of exploring options, so yes, there's truth to it if you must know. I'm tired of this fighting. I'm tired of these planes, of being away from civilization, of killing Parshendi a handful at a time. However, I've given up on getting us to retreat. Instead, I want to win. But the High Princes won't listen. They all assume that I'm trying to dominate them with some crafty trick.
Ow! You'd sooner punch a man in the face than stab him in the back. Blessedly straightforward.
Ally with me.
Sadeus froze.
You know I'm not going to betray you, Sadeus. You trust me as the others never can. Try what I've been trying to get the other High Princes to agree to. Jointly assault plateaus with me.
Won't work. There's no reason to bring more than one army on an assault. I leave half my troops behind each time as it is. There isn't room for more to maneuver.
Yes, but think. What if we tried new tactics? Your quick bridge crews are fast, but my troops are stronger. What if you pushed quickly to a plateau with an advance force to hold off the Parshendi? You could hold until my stronger but slower forces arrive.
That gave Sadeus pause.
It could mean a shard blade, Sadeus.
Sadeus's eyes grew hungry.
I know you fought Parshendi shardbearers, but you lost. Without a blade, you're at a disadvantage. I've slain 2 in the past. I don't often have the opportunity, however, because I can't get to the plateaus quickly enough. You can. Together we can win more often, and I can get you a blade. We can do this, Sadeus, together, like the old days.
Oh, the old days. I'd like to see the Blackthorn in battle again. How would we split the gem hearts?
2/3 to you, as you've got twice as good a record at winning assaults as I have.
And the shard blades?
If we find a shard bearer, Adolin and I will take him. You win the blade, but I win the plate, to give to my son, Renarin.
The invalid?
What would you care? You already have plate. Sadeus, this could mean winning the war. If we start to work together, we could bring the others in, prepare for a large-scale assault. Storms, we might not even need that. We, too, have the largest armies. If we could find a way to catch the Pashendi on a large enough plateau, with the bulk of our troops surrounding them so they couldn't escape, we might be able to damage their forces enough to bring an end to all of this.
Yeah, very well. Send me details via messenger, but do it later. I've already missed too much of tonight's feast.